Bob Fisher has just returned from the Czech Republic and written a very, very good article. Welcome, Bob.
How are you doing, Roy? Nice to talk to you again.
Doing terrific. I find it very interesting. You refer to the Czech Republic as the new and emerging Central Europe hotspot. Tell us about that.
Well, from many points of view, from a travel and tourism point of view, first of all, the Czech Republic has really become a popular destination, but also from a business point of view. The Czech Republic, if I'm looking right now, Roy, at an interactive map of Europe, and I'm just going to give you a little geographical context here because this is what it's all about. The Czech Republic is really in the very heart of Europe, surrounded to the west by Germany, to the northeast by Poland, Slovakia, of course, which used to be part of it when it was Czechoslovakia. Then you've got Hungary, and then you also have Austria. And right smack dab in the middle is the capital, Prague. And from a business point of view, an awful lot is happening in the Czech Republic. But from a travel and tourism point of view, it's absolutely booming, and it's a sublime destination.
What's also interesting is that I tend to refer to it as Czechoslovakia because that's basically what we're used to. But you're absolutely right. It's now referred to as the Czech Republic.
Right, and as you may recall, when the Soviet Union did a nosedive and just suddenly fell apart like a house of cards, the former Soviet nations all started to come into their own, and Czechoslovakia very quietly kind of separated into two countries, and they shook hands and quietly went their own way. The Slovaks became Slovakia, and the Czechs became the Czech Republic.
Now, I might be getting ahead of myself a little, but that area has gone through a number of terrible tragedies. One was the First World War, the Second World War, and as you've just referred to, the Russian...
The communist period as well.
Right, yeah. The communist period, right. Exactly.
Well, this is another reason why. It is this story, and what I've tried to say in this story, Karlo Vivari, through a lens obliquely, is that the Czech Republic and Karlo Vivari itself is right at the center of European history for a long, long time. And if I can just explain, Karlo Vivari is the Czech name for what a lot of people would know as Carlsbad. And Carlsbad is spelled either with a C as it is in English or with a K as it is in German. And Carlsbad, Karlo Vivari, was the most important spa town in Europe, where all the crowned heads and nobility went, especially in the Golden Age, which was the 18th and 19th century. However, the town is named after the emperor, the Holy Roman Emperor, Charles IV, who founded the town in 1370. So the history goes way back to that time, and it was a very turbulent time in European history. There was this big struggle going on between the Pope in Rome, or wherever he was at the time. In other words, the struggle between the church and the state, between the nations. Who was really going to be in charge of Christendom, really, is what it was all about.
Right. And Charles was also the German king, the king of Bohemia as well, yeah.
And Bohemia actually is the region of the Czech Republic where Karlo Vivari is located now.
Yeah. Right.
But you're quite right. The other big thing that was happening in Europe at that time was the plague, the bubonic plague, the Black Death.
Right.
And that really destabilized all of Europe and part of Eurasia. Like a third of the people. And it's difficult to remember this, but a third of the people died in that plague. Well, all your social systems and institutions and government and all that kind of thing kind of fell apart. So when Charles came on the scene, thanks in part to the current Pope, who was Pope Clement VI, he pulled it all back together again in the Holy Roman Empire. And this
you say that, that Charles... was crowned emperor in Rome in 1355.
Right. Well, he what is important there too, that because you know Rome, the Vatican, it was the center of Christendom,
right.
And the Holy Roman Empire. What he kind of did was he shifted it away. Even though he was crowned in Rome, that gave him the legitimacy of being recognized by the Catholic Church.
Right.
But really from a political point of view, he shifted it back to what is today the Czech Republic. It was, as you well know, the struggles between state and church even today. And what happened then was that he really took control. And even though he had made major concessions to the Pope, Pope Clement at the time, he eventually got the upper hand because he became more powerful. But he pulled Europe back into a functioning state, essentially. And that's why he was such a strong leader. And it's also very symbolic. And that's why Carlo Vivari is named after him. And what he essentially did, and I'll just finish the historical part, he ended years and years of conflict between popes and heads of state, because they were each trying to say, okay, who's in charge of the people? And so that was the importance of him. And in part two, that's why in later centuries, everybody from Peter the Great in Russia to Edward VII in England, Mozart, Beethoven, Goethe, all the way up to the 20th century, Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks, they were all coming to this spa town called Carlsbad or Carlo Vivari. And it was what it became. It of course was and is an area of incredible beauty. It's in this mountainous area, two rivers coming together. It's a perfect spa setting where you basically get away from everything.
In those days, hot spas were obviously very attractive because hot water was very scarce, unlike we have today where you take a nice hot shower or bath. So you can imagine in these cold climates how pleasing it must be to get into a wonderful hot spa river. Had to be just amazing.
You're bang on. And of course the other thing is the spas that developed, and it wasn't just in Europe, but the spas developed with mineral waters that, you know, were created under the Earth's surface, and they do contain specific minerals.
But such as sulfur and things
right,
like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But even as you suggested, you know, if you're an old king from England and you're suffering from arthritis and rheumatism, et cetera, absolutely. You know, you come, first of all, you get away from all the political problems, the problems of the state. You come, you relax, you eat well, you get some exercise, and of course, it's the original alternative health care, health therapy, strategically right there in the heart of Europe, and today the Czech Republic is, I'll tell you, it's where it's really happening. And if people go to my article, there's a recorded interview there with a man that I encountered in another spa town called Marienbad. And he's an Englishman who has moved there and set up business, and he's doing very well. You know, people looking for new opportunities. Obviously, they're rising in Eastern Europe, and most people have thought of Czechoslovakia, quote-unquote, as an Eastern European country. But again, I'm looking at the map, and it's the geographical center of Europe. So it's the new center.
And you talk about the Velvet Revolution.
Right. Well, you know, when Czechoslovakia was struggling, and I mean struggling under a communist rule, and that's the other thing, when you go to Prague especially, you really see what these people had to live under for such a long time. They tried to get out from under the communist dominance in 1968, and that was called the Prague Spring. But the Soviets moved in with the tanks and they just put it down. But when the Soviet Union started to come apart, the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia went through what is known as the Velvet Revolution. In other words, they just went their own way quietly, peacefully, and there was nothing, of course, the Soviets could do because they were all coming apart. And it's very much the way of life and the culture of the Czech Republic. This is a very gentle, beautiful landscape, absolutely beautiful landscape, quiet, friendly, but not overly friendly. These are private people. You have to remember what former communist states, what they went through. And, of course, as you pointed out, they went through the First World War. It shut down Karlovy Vary because, you know, the war to end all wars just stopped everything happening in Europe. But then the Second World War began when Hitler marched into what's called the Sudetenland, and Karlovy Vary is right in the center of Sudetenland. And that's when the Second World War was on. So they went through all that as well. And Second World War ends, and under the treaty, Czechoslovakia comes under the Soviet influence, and
right
now
back in the middle of it again.
Right, under communism. You know, they've seen many empires, and they've been through an awful lot. But at the same time, to many respects, Karlovy Vary especially has been what I refer to as an island of tranquility in a sea of imperial storms. And it really was, and it still is today. People are flocking to this town for the getaway spa experience.
And, of course, they're famous for their glassworks.
Oh, right. And if I can just be a little nostalgic here, Roy, 1967 was Canada's centennial year, and we got the World's Fair. We don't have World's Fairs anymore. But we got Expo 67 in Montreal. And the world came to Montreal. Well, of the pavilions, the most popular, the most spectacular was the Czech pavilion. And it was an absolute sensation for a number of reasons. And partially because Czechoslovakia was still very much under the communist regime. But that pavilion, and I remember it clearly, it was full of this incredible glass. Because the Czech Republic has always been known for its glass, the glass of kings. And one of the major producers in the company is the Moser Company, and there are links in the article. I call them the House of Moser. There's a slideshow there if you want to look at some of the glass that I saw. What was ironic was that the Czech glass artists were on display in Montreal, and it was the first time really, especially us in North America, we really got to see what was happening artistically in glass in what was then Czechoslovakia. But ironically, the glass artists were not under the same pressure to follow the communist realism form of art. And that was because they needed this glass for export, and they were making a lot of money from it. Many royal households throughout the world buy their tableware. You know, they go shopping at Moser. The Queen of England, the dear old thing, if you and I ever get invited for lunch at Buckingham Palace, we're probably going to be eating off glassware that came from Karlovy Vary.
Well, I'm looking at the website, and I must say that the colors, for those that have access to the Internet at the moment, if you go to our site, ttrn.com, and to Bob's article, you can look at some of this. And as he says, there's a slideshow up there as well. And but, you know, what you're showing in your article is mostly glass art. But what you're also saying, and I'm really not familiar with their glass, is that there's also a crystal glass and that you would normally, as you say, eat or drink out of like one would with another, like the Irish Crystal Rosenthal or one of those as well.
Right. And, you know, I've called this article Carlo Vivari Through a Lens Obliquely. Now, you know me, Roy. I like to play with words, with language. And that's kind of a reference to a famous expression, through a glass darkly, that is from the Christian Bible. I think it's St. Paul, actually, and it was an expression that meant that that we as human beings, we have an obscure, imperfect vision of reality, and we really won't see things clearly until the end of time. Well, I've taken the expression and I've said, and I've kind of played with it and said, when you visit Carlo Vivari, you're looking through a lens obliquely, as if you're looking through a prism. And really, this town takes you through different levels of vision, different levels of experience of European history, way back from the 1300s all the way up to the new Europe. And the central photograph I have there was an amazing piece of glass sculpture right in the center of town. And what I'm doing there is I'm photographing through this glass sculpture, which is like a lens, and then you can even see the prism-like rainbow colors. And Carlo Vivari is very much like this. You're looking through a special lens, and you're looking at a culture that, since the 1300s, has been one of the dominant cultures in Europe. It's a wonderful experience from that point of view. And we really need to drink to it, Roy, with the national drink.
Another one of your discoveries. Yeah. We've gone a long way since margaritas.
You're right. Now, you introduced me to the margarita, and now I'm going to introduce you to Bekarovka. And if people want to know more about this, they should listen to the little audio interview I have there with the young man. It's the national drink of the Czech Republic, and it was invented here in Karlo Vivari. It was invented as a health drink by these two men, one of whom was a pharmacist. And people would come to spa towns, this one especially, to take the waters, to drink the waters. But they would also have this tonic. It's a tonic, like, well, there's a fair amount of alcohol in this tonic, but it's also made up of herbs and spices. As I say in the article,
A little bit like the snake water they used to sell.
Well, who knows?
The Old West.
Yeah, I suspect the snake water didn't have the
as much of a kick. Yeah,
right. The minerals or the herbs and spices, etc.
Right, exactly.
But this is a very important company, and if you go, and it's a beautiful website too, but it has a secret recipe. And as the ads for the drink, Bekarovka says it possesses a drop of immortality. It's more like a cognac, and you can drink it as an aperitif before the meal, after the meal. You know, what I have discovered is I like it as a gin and tonic. Instead of using gin, I use Bekarovka.
Right.
So get yourself a bottle, Roy. You'll be able to find it in a liquor store. If you make what I call a B&T as opposed to a G&T, it has to have lime in it. Not only does it have slice of lime, but you've got to squeeze that slice of lime, because that little bit of lime juice goes beautifully with the herbs and spices. So when I'm having a margarita, you can have a B&T. How about that?
And what all I need to do is pour it neat and squeeze a little lime in it.
Oh, I forgot something.
Chill
really
it, Jeff.
Yeah. It has to be very chilled in the refrigerator so that it's this amber liquid. It's beautiful. It's almost like cold honey, and it sort of flows out of the bottle.
Lovely,
but it's a really good drink.
Well, so, it sounds good. It sounds good to me. In fact, I'm halfway out the door,
okay,
over to the local liquor store, and I will I'll report back to you. Great article, Bob. And again, once again, for those listening, go to your computer and go to Bob's article. There's some great photographs up there. The glass is beautiful, and Bob, we certainly appreciate you sharing this. with us. I understand that you've also recently returned from Daytona Beach in Florida. We may be chatting about that very soon as well.
Great Florida city with a lot to discover that you never knew was there.
Well, I've got to say bye for now, and
okay.
Happy travels.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.